circuits will be interesting to study and to play with, but ultimately I think most radios that are going to be sold in the future to hams are going to be software-defined radios. Eventually there won't even be hybrid, part legacy, part SDRs. They'll just be pure SDRs. But I mean, one of the great benefits of an SDR that you mentioned, Rich, is that it doesn't rely on components to do its thing. It relies on algorithms. There are algorithms that will demodulate frequency-modulated signals. There are other algorithms that will demodulate single sideband signals, others the CW signals, other AM signals, and it goes on and on and on. So all you need is a firmware update if you have enough memory capacity, and your radio is now as capable of modes that legacy radios can't be unless you basically opened it up and pried some extra parts into it. You know, people will take apart a linear amplifier that isn't designed for all the bands and put in circuits to allow them to use the bands. That's hardware. That's muscle and sweat and all kinds of, and solder. SDRs, you just run a firmware, and all of a sudden your capabilities are expanded. So I'm a very big fan of SDRs. I'm probably lucky that they haven't, Flex Radio hasn't decided to sell an 8700, because, you know, it probably cost me a heck of a lot more money to do that. So I can be just happy with my 6700 and be done with it. But that's the future, guys, software-defined radios.
Comment?
There is one thing about the 7300 that is confounding to me. I can't figure it out. And I wonder if Paul has the answer to this. They have a spectrum scope as part of the readout, as part of the main screen. And for the life of me, I can't see the use of the spectrum scope. And it takes up a lot of real estate, which I wish they would either devote to the waterfall or devote to other, you know, the frequency and the signal strength and the SWR meter. I don't see any use for that spectrum scope. Do you, Paul?
Using it, and can you like make that go away now? Once you brought it up, or are you stuck with that? Right now, I'm very happy with, you know, seeing the signal, you know, the strength of what's coming in. I'm very happy with, you know, watching my signal go out. I mean, to me, it's most important stuff. But no, I'm not using that, Rich. Can you make it go away if you want?
You can't make it go, well, you can and you can't. You could turn the colors all to black. For the three colors, you know, red, green, and blue. You turn those all to zero, and it's still there, except you can't see it. You can't make it go away totally and regain that real estate on the screen. So that's a problem. I just don't see any use for it at all. Who cares what the graph looks like? It doesn't do anything. The waterfall does it all. Anyway, Paul, the other thing that I do love on CW, you know, you can enter in calling CQ, so you don't have to constantly be tapping out CQ. I probably should for the practice of it, but I'd rather have the radio call CQ for me on both voice and CW than me sitting there doing that myself. Back to net.
K2MI.
Yes, K2MI.
Good evening. I think I could help with the 7300 questions. The call is Kilo Delta 2, Mike India. Name is John.
Okay, John.
Okay, issue with the display, there's a button called M, scope. It's the middle button. If you hit that on my radio, it's three times, basically cycles the screen. It will get rid of the spectrum scope and makes the frequency large and the S meter large. And that can be modified through the menu. Hit menu, hit meter, and there's all sorts of things you can see. SWR, compression, ALC. And then I also I heard about the issue of the kilohertz. I can address that as well.
Sure.
Okay, in the upper right-hand corner, the operator was saying that he saw kilohertz. That is in reference to the multi-knob, which is just to the upper left of the VFO. It's on the right side of the radio, to the left of the RIT button. And if his radio is saying kilohertz there, if he rotates the multi-knob, that'll increment in 1 kilohertz steps. Now, on my radio, I have this multi-knob set for RF power, so I can turn the power up and down, and not cook the radio as I'm using a manual antenna tuner. By pressing the multi-knob in, it brings up a menu screen, and I have choices of RF power, key or speed, CW pitch. To change the default just on the screen, the touch screen, press and hold, in this case RF power, and now the upper right-hand corner will say RF power instead of kilohertz.
What about compression? What do you set your compression? It's on a scale of 1 to 10, and mine's set at 10. I think that's maybe how it came out of the box. But what do you set your, I guess it's your microphone compression.
Good question. I hardly use any compression, do mostly CW, but I'm just checking the radio now to see if I can find that setting. Okay, yeah, I'm not seeing it now, of course, but did that at least answer the other fellow's question? I maybe it's Paul? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, John, so what do, right now it's 0 kilohertz, so if I turn the multi-dial, that's all I have to do is turn that, and that'll change it?
It'll change your display. The VFO, it'll change it in 1 kilohertz steps. I don't find that very useful myself, so I, by pressing, holding the multi-knob, excuse me, press the multi-knob once, don't hold. It brings up a little menu, and then I get choices of RF, key of speed, or CW pitch. By tapping on the touch screen, let's say key of speed, and then you can press and hold on the touch screen key or speed. I've now set the multi-knob to control key or speed, the internal key or speed, back to net control.
Okay, very good. So, Paul, you got your answer, right?
Yeah, but I don't get the purpose. Like, I have it on now. It was zero. And it just automatically it went up 0-1. And then as time goes on, it'll actually change. The number will actually change. It'll go to 2 or 12. Or, I really don't get it. But, you know, it's not doing any harm. That's okay. And that's to change the speed of, you know, when I turn the dial, like right now I'm on 14.35.16. If I just touch the 3.5, the 0.6 goes away, and it'd be going up in 5 kilohertz steps. So that's how I changed that. Now the kilohertz number has just changed to 0.02 as I'm just sitting here looking at it. Not sure why it's doing that. Anyway, do you know, John?
May I take it?
Yeah, sure, John.
Okay, Paul, you on listening to the Middle Island repeater, you're cutting in and out a little bit on that, at least on this end, that's what I'm hearing. But anyway, I think what you're actually seeing is the clock. Now, on my radio, the internal battery on the 7300 is shot. And basically, so every time I turn on the radio, it doesn't remember the time from the, because my power supply is off when I'm not using it. If the radio has been not used in more than, let's say, 24 hours, the clock automatically sets to 000. Now, as you have the radio on, it starts counting from 000 in 1 minute increments. So that's probably what you're seeing. If you were to go in and reset the clock, it'll and of course leave your power supply on. You know, it'll just keep track of the time.
Very good, John. Okay, so that is the clock. And then the kilohertz, that's just letting me know that when I tune, I'm going to be changing. It's going to be changing the kilohertz as I go up and down the band. I got it. Very well done. Hey, Rich, did you hear this? Problem solved. Anyway, thank you, John. Back to you. WS2N.
W2BZ. Yeah, Rich? John, first of all, when you have the waterfall on, you can't get rid of the spectrum scope. I haven't found a way when the waterfall is on. Number two, this compression thing that I was talking about, you just press in the multifunction button that you were talking about, and what comes up is RF power, mic gain, compression, and monitor. And as I said, the compression is on a scale of 1 to 10, mine is set to 10. I don't remember doing that, but I don't know if it maybe should be at 5. You know, halfway up the scale, I'm not quite sure. Go ahead, John.
Okay, now I see what you're talking about. I had to switch my radio from CW to, in this case, upper sideband. And, yeah, I see the same thing. RF power on the top, mic gain. I have my compression set to 3. I don't do a whole lot of voice. I don't do a whole lot of contesting, and I can't stand signals that are splattering up and down the band, so I have barely compression.
Yeah, that's what I figured also. I don't like this, you know, compressed voices. Unless you're, you know, in a contest or you're trying to fight a pileup, maybe that's when you increase the compression. I don't know. What does it sound like, you know, if you have compression at 10? Does it sound much different than at 3, do you know?
Unfortunately, I can't answer that. I do very little voice communication. You know, I know there's some guys that really get into this stuff. They have outboard equipment, you know, mixers and mics, you know, fancy microphones. I use the standard handheld mic that came with the radio, and I keep the gains kind of down. When I do operate SSB, I do look at the ALC indication to try and make sure I'm, you know, keeping it within whatever the limit was there, you know. Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not well-versed in that area. Back to you.
Yeah, Jeff, by the way, generally speaking, the more compression you put on it, the more fatiguing it is to listen to, more people will kind of notice you, but not in a good way. But you want to say something, Jeff?
Yeah, sorry, let me drop. Yeah, you're exactly right, Roy, in the previous station who had his compression set at 0.3 or 3 out of 10 was absolutely right. Setting it at 10, you will sound absolutely horrendous, and nobody will pick you up. It's
not punchier, it's not stronger, it's not anything, or lower compression, 2 or 3 is what I, when I had a 7300, that's what I said of that. And I listen to people doing these tests on the air with other people on the 20 meter band, and as they got up to the higher compressions, they sounded absolutely horrendous. So keep it low.
What is the purpose of compression?
Did you remember the old commercials where the show would be a certain volume, and all of a sudden the commercial would scream at you, and the average power was the same, but what was happening was they were taking all the little lower dynamic range portions and boosting them up so that they were all equally annoying. So it basically compresses the dynamic range so that everything sounds like someone's yelling at you.
I wonder why on the 7300 or any radio, what's the importance of that in ham radio?
Some people feel that in contests you are noticed by being annoying. It's again like commercials. You remember when there was a philosophy among commercials that you don't have to really sell the product, you don't even have to mention the product, you just have to have it be memorable. And the best way to be memorable, they thought, was just to annoy the heck out of you.
Yeah. Jeff, one other question. You know that RFG enunciation, it's right under USB-C, you know, it's right under the mode. The modes on the top of the upper left-hand side of the screen. What does RFG mean?
I'm sorry, who was that?
To my
Indian? Okay, that was an interesting double. I think Rich meant John, although he asked Jeff. So let's try John first, because you have the radio in front of you.
Okay, I believe it's RFT, Romeo India Tango. Is that back to you?
It's definitely RFT, like George. And to the right of that, there's an IP. Plus, IP plus. So it's RFG, and then to the right, IP plus. The RFG never goes away.
Okay, so you're looking at after you hit the menu button. I have to take a look here.
No, it's just on the regular screen. I'm looking right below the mode button, you know, the touch screen mode button, where you have CW, USB, RIDI, you know. What do you see on your radio right below that touch button?
Yeah, I'm not seeing that. I have a feeling these radios could be configured depending on your preferences. This is not an actual, it's a physical button, or is it just something you're seeing on the screen that you can touch?
Oh, it's just letters on the screen. It's not a button.
All right. Yeah, I do see the IT plus option, but I'm not seeing that other RFG. I guess maybe let the net continue, and I'll listen and, you know, play around with the radio here, see if I can find that also.
Maybe RFG.
Say again?
It might be RFG.
I don't think so. In Google, which is problematic, and you'd think it says, people also ask, what is the RFG ICOM 7300? And the answer makes little sense to me. It says the ICOM 7300 employs an RF direct sampling system. RF signals are directly converted to digital data and processed in the field programmable gate arrays. This system is leading technology, marking an epoch in amateur radio, yada, yada. So I'm not quite sure if that even answers the question.
JD, who am I?
Yes, John.
Back to the question.
Okay.
Okay, I believe it's Rich I'm speaking to. If you rotate the outer knob, let's see, the inner knob is volume, the outer knob or AF gain, outer knob is your RF gain combination squelch. If you rotate that clockwise, you'll notice RFG will disappear. If you have it below, let's say, the 12 o'clock position, the halfway point, if you have it below that, that indication on the screen of RFG is letting you know you have the RF gain down. So what I usually do, I just bring it up past the 12 o'clock position, and you'll see that that'll disappear.
I just did that on mine.
Yes, I just did it, and for the first time, it did disappear. Don't know the significance of it, but it did disappear.
RF gain. It's basically letting you know that you have your RF gain not all the way up.
Comment, WS2N?
Yeah, sure, Paul. I mean, it's a kind of a weird indicator, indicating that your RF gain is 50% up or something. That's odd. I mean, my radio, you know, I know where it is, where I put it. But anyway, Paul, go ahead.
Okay, what ICOM did is they combined the two settings, you know, like on the Kenwood, you would have a separate dial for RF gain and a separate dial for squelch. It's all one now. So, like John says, that back dial, not the volume, but the back dial. You turn to the left, you're going to be changing your RF gain. It's going to, you know, further you go, the bigger the change. Then you bring it all the way back up to zenith, and you know, you're back where you started. Now, if you go to the right, you keep going to the right, you're going to be, it works as a squelch setting. Squelch, some people want that separate, and you know, you could go into the radio and change all of that, but according to the one YouTube I saw, they said just leave it alone, there's no reason to do that. So, you know, it's combining two in one. RF gain and the squelch on the same dial. Back to you.
Oh, VDH with a comment?
Correct.
Yeah, VDH.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention, I suspect they probably give you that. I don't have the 7300, but I suspect they probably give you that RF gain control there in case you have a very strong local signal. And you may want to prevent some kind of intermod problems. I know on my Japan radio company receiver, I have an attenuator that in the event of strong local signals, you could switch in 10 or 20 dB attenuation right at the front end. It might be for something like that to avoid any intermod problems.
But my ears tell me what's happening. I don't need a little indicator to tell me what's happening.
Well, sometimes though a locally strong signal can give you some intermod problems. So it just giving you that option. I find that this is with the sofa defined radios. You have so many different options and possibilities. You start to wonder how many times you really need them. But yeah, I suspect that might be what it's for.
I would be willing to bet there's an attenuator setting as well. It sounds like everything anyone thought of, ICOM put into this machine.
KD, who am I?
Yes, John. Yeah, John?
Yes, there is a preamp, two preamps and an attenuator, an actual dedicated button on the 7300. It's just above the AF gain RF setting, RF gain setting.
Yeah, I assumed it has all the bells and whistles. I've never actually seen one. I've seen them on videos. I've read about them, but yeah. Okay, very nice radio. But, you know, you probably should consider actually reading the damn manual. I know, you know, a lot of people don't like that. But, you know, YouTube is nice, but you might be able to kind of figure it out more quickly and quietly than, you know, some videos, some YouTubes are kind of wordy. And they have a lot of extraneous stuff because they feel that they have to have some kind of personality in order to win views. So you got to deal with their personality. But, you know, your mileage might vary, but especially with the modern radios, you really should consider reading the manual.
Without those videos, I would be, I don't know, I'd be at stage one of learning this radio, where right now I'm at about an 8 on the scale of knowing the radio. These videos, if you select the right videos, are wonderful in learning the radio.
Probably can't read.
Okay, whatever works for you. You know, I mean, like I said, I'm a different type of a person. I enjoy reading, and I like manuals, per se. But, yeah, different strokes for different folks. I've seen too many kind of lame YouTubes that were a waste of my time. But, you know, I mean, I listen to them occasionally. But if I have a manual and I can, and an index especially, usually that's the first place I personally go.
I pull out the manual a lot when I see something on the screen that I don't understand. But I never read the manual just to read the manual. You know, I only read it in relation to something that was happening at the time. But no, I'm a visual guy, an audio-visual guy. That's why I love instructional videos.
Okay. What can I tell you? I was one of those little kids that read the encyclopedia from front to back. I heard some kind of weird story that some billionaire claims that he did something similar. A lot of kids did.
WB2HWW with a comment, gentlemen, coming in from All Star.
Certainly, Howard.
Okay, IP stands for intercept point. You have RFG and IP, that changes the intercept point on your preamp for inter-mod issues. You change the dynamic range. That's what IP stands for. WD2HWW.
Okay, very good, Howard. Thank you. That would not seem to be obvious to me, personally. You'd think that they should kind of write something down about that.
Well, most of these radios, you can change the IP point of the front end. And by the way, sometime in the old days, people would raise the AF gain all the way up and ride the RF gain, and use the RF gain basically as your volume control. If you go back to the earlier days of tube equipment, most operators would ride the RF gain and not the AF gain. They would use just as much RF gain as needed to get the signal. WD2HWW and IP stands, you know, sets the gain parameters of the front end transistor for the intermod and linearity.
Okay, I got kicked off. Something's wonky with All-Star. I got kicked off of All-Star, so I had to restart something. Anyway, are we done discussing the 7300 for tonight, or any other comments out there?
Did you copy my last comment about riding the RF game? Why people would ride the RF game and raise the F game all the way up?
Yeah, I got about two-thirds of it, and then All-Star kicked me off.
Okay, I just wanted to make that comment to, you know, repeat. The IP button or IP setting changes the gain of the front-end transistor or the dynamic intercept point so that you get overload, because you can, you know, you can have a station 50 kc's away that could cause intermod. You won't hear it, but it may descent your receiver, track down stuff. So you're going to change the, you can insert or deinsert the IP point setting for that particular front end and reduce the intermod. WD2HWW.
Okay, very good, Howard. As far as I can recall, my I don't have any radio that has that ability. Flex 6700, I don't remember that being in its list of tricks.
Well, most of the upper end and software defined radios let you do that. And some of the Kenwood radios would let you do that. But in the old days, you didn't call an IP. You just played with the RF gate, and that also played with your AGC. I don't know if anybody remembers it, but in the old days, if you lower the RF gate, your S meter would start going up, showing you that you needed a signal above that particular point. WD2HWW. I'm done.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Howard. Yeah, that was kind of the first question I ever sent to the technical net, because I thought it was interesting. My ICOM 7100, you know, if I change the RF gain, all kinds of other things would shift the signal strength and such. Would kind of go in a wonky position. Thanks you very much, Howard.
Hey, did you Bill comment?
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah, I think the Sherwood Engineering page, which ranks radios, relies heavily on the third order intercept point as one of the kind of gold standard characteristics. Maybe Howard wants to comment on that as well.
Okay, another comment real quick. Yes, that's a third intercept. But where you would use that IP, that's a very important thing. If you're in a contest and you're at a field fight or field day and you got someone, let's say you're on 20 meters and some guy is on 40 meters overloading you, you will play with that IP point to reduce the link, to get more linearity at the third order intercept point so you can hear stuff. So basically you would use that feature, the IP feature, if you're operating in a contest environment or a field day and somebody's 50 feet away from you running, several hundred watts. So in close quarters, you would use that particular feature. WD2HWW.
Yeah, my understanding as well. Back to that.
Okay, very good. Well, Paul, you got your answers. Rich, you got your answers. Thanks, everyone, for participating. And keep it up. Next on my list is Glenn. Are you still out there, Glenn?
I'm over here.
Yeah, Wes, we should get to you real soon. I just want to, try and get some order out of this. So is N2ZEA still around?
WBJWW. Clear. Good night, gentlemen.
Okay, guys, sorry. I got kicked off All-Star. It demodulated. Just weird things. I don't know. Modern technology. Anyway, Glenn, and to ZEA. Are you out there? Okay, I guess he had to step away, unfortunately. Leslie, what do you got for us tonight?
Yeah, I'm going to try to go quick. The 8-meter band. Who knew? So, 8 meters apparently amateurs from Lithuania, Slovenia, Ireland, Denmark, and South Africa now have privileges in 8-meter amateur radio band, which spans from 40.66 to 40.7 megahertz. And there are a few informations about it. The first contact on 40 megahertz was made between Ireland and Slovenia and at 2020. And there is a license given by the FCC to a few guys in the United States. It's an experimental license and everybody can apply for it. So WL2XUP is an FCC Part 5 experimental station operated by Lynn Hancock and I4Y in Georgia. It is licensed to operate with 400 watts effective radiated power between 40 megahertz, 40.66 to 40.7 megahertz. There is another guy, John Desmond. This one is EI7GL, and he reports intermittently transmitting weak signals, propagation reported by Whisper. There are a few informations about it. There are a few guys who operate on it. I'm not sure when the FCC will approve this band, but I hope it will come soon. Back to you.
Okay. Any particular reason where you're discussing this particular band?
Yes. The reason for that is that everybody can apply to the FCC for experimental license and operate on that band.
VDH with a comment.
Yeah, John?
Yeah, I suspect, 30 to 50 megahertz was and I think still is a public service band, but I suspect that as more of those public services move to the higher VHF and UHF frequencies, I guess that band might become available. But I know right now, I'm pretty sure 30 to 50 megahertz was for public service. I think there is some fire department activity in some parts of Nassau County using those frequencies.
Oh, okay. Well, I certainly can't see into the FCC's mind of, you know, whether it's just an experimental thing or something that's going to lead to something somewhat more important. I would rather, as Rich W2BZ said earlier, that hams kind of start to use the bands that they already have, and that they wander around and do kind of experimental stuff on the edges. But, you know, whatever people want to do, let them do.
So far, the countries they are authorized to use this band is Slovenia, South Africa, Ireland, Belgium, Spain, and Italy. Okay. The next object, tune any Android into real VHF two-way radio transceiver. So, it's an interesting subject. You can purchase a small board that comes from China with the enclosure. Some of them are sold for $20 as the assembled do-it-yourself module, and the model number is Sierra Alpha 818-V. It is connected via Bluetooth with the telephone, and it can operate as a two-way radio. There is a SMA male antenna of your choice that you could choose, or quarter wave signal stick. I'm reading that, what they call it, signal stick, whatever. Choose one of those two connectors, and it's SMA connector. You have a few options on it, and you can make it if you want to. Back to you.
Well, the important thing is, do you want to? No, because I don't have an Android, and I like my cell phone to be a cell phone, and do I need another VHF antenna, that VHF radio that kind of sticks on the back of something and can fall off? And I don't know. I read the article. I saw the video. You know, I mean, just because you can do a thing doesn't necessarily mean you should do that thing. But, you know, if you're into that, it's available.
The next subject, amateur radio propagation during alignment, and questions to Paul about part of the parade of planets. So, how often does it happen? How long does it last? Paul.
How long does propagation last? That has nothing to do with the... Oh, you're talking about the six planets that people could see. Is that what you're talking about, all one time?
That is correct.
Oh, it'll last until, let's see. Some people include Mercury on that. You know, that would be another one. Of course, that's out of the question, because it's too close to the sun. And actually, I've never seen it. Because, you know, I've never gone through the trouble of getting to a location where the horizon is so low and conditions are just right for me to see it. So, eventually what's going to happen is Venus will eventually start to set earlier and earlier. You know, each time you look at it right now, it's lower in the sky day after day. Eventually that'll start to drop below the horizon. And the other ones will pretty much stay like that. Probably, I'm going to say probably for at least 3 weeks or so before you go from six to five. But, you know, it's not an unusual situation. It's happened many times before. When they had the grand tour, they called it with Voyagers back in 77, you had all the planets lining up like that. And that's one of the reasons they found it so important to launch when they did, because it wasn't going to happen, that perfect alignment for all those in, you know, maybe 100 years or something. So, you know, it depends on what's important at the time. At the time, it was launching those two spacecraft. This time, it's just for people to view the planets, you know. But, you know, I don't need to have them all together to view the planets. You know, for instance, Venus has been up there for, it seems like, the last 2 months. You go out and you always see Venus in the western sky, right at the sunset. Anyway, back to you, West, WS to West.
Yes, that happened on Friday. Jupiter, Saturn, Mars, and Venus at 8:30 p.m. visible to the naked eye. Mercury was seen, but it is more challenging to distinguish because of its proximity to Sun, Uranus, and Neptune. Neptune should be the right way to say it, but they say Neptune, which also too faint to be seen without assistance. So, if somebody wants to use binoculars or telescope, it's okay. Now, there is also something that is interesting. We have scientists and teachers for ham radio. There is a cold space weather news forecast sponsored by Millersville University, Pennsylvania, and that is run by Professor Tamida Sokov, PhD, and Johnny Manhattan, PhD. It's a video on YouTube. So they put a clip there, among many clips, a radio blackout map, and they talk a lot about the ham radio, so I assume so one of them at least is a ham radio operator. Let me refresh. We see amateur radio and HF radio should be pretty good at the beginning of the solar storm because we had a solar storm in Thursday. But remember that this video was made on Wednesday. So February 26th was, they talk about February 26th propagation and amateur radio propagation that was good at the time at the beginning of radiation store. They were also warning the GPS installation risk known as ROY, not Dr. Roy, but Roy, index that talks about where GPS signal degradation will or could be very high. They also were talking about South America and West Africa and perturbation to ham radio operation and good and the poor distance, I mean, short distance, if I would say long distance QSO that you could have. So it is worth to look at it. Dr. Roy, for your comments.
Nothing much to say. I mean, you just gave information.
Okay, so again, the YouTube channel that is sponsored by Millersville University. I believe the name of the clip was Radio Blackout Map, but the channel is Space Weather News Forecast, sponsored in part by Millersville University, Pennsylvania, USA. So, the next. Oh, actually, I have it. No, the name of the channel is Dr. Tamida Sokov. Dr. Tamida Sokov. The first name is Tamitha, and the last name is Skov. That's the name of the channel. And the name of the clip is A Planetary Alignment While Solar Storm Heads for Earth. Space Weather News for 26 February 2025. So I found it. The next one is a 32-bit recorder mate you should know about. Let's drop it. Okay, we have a new toy that is rapidly expanding. The 32-bit recorder. So it's a digital recorder for the voice. Hams may want to record their QSO and use DaVinci Resolve editing software that is for free to cut noises, unneeded sounds, and leave a clear conversation track. some others may wish to record family events, weddings, and so on, have the best possible quality audio. And some others use it for making YouTube videos or professional video film recordings. So what happens? Mobile phones have better and better cameras now, and DSLR cameras become history, replaced by mirrorless rigs, and nobody buys camcorders cameras at the rate they did before. Due to the market saturation and the struggle with lack of ability to make fresh money, the audio and video field industries represented by Sony, Panasonic, Canon made few tricks. They changed the mount in their new cameras. So, for example, EF mount that was pretty much popular to RF mount, and now you can't use your old lenses unless you pay quite good money for an adapter. And some lenses doesn't work with the new cameras at all. Let me drop it. The new lenses are now needed to be manufactured and sold, and the price for a single lens can be between $400 and $25,000, and some of them cost $300,000, especially motorized zooms and focus ones, so it's much more than the camera by itself. Sound is equally important as video, so there are some myths about those tricks used often in promoting campaigns, fooling you as only what counts for them is uneducated buyers and money flow. So because Technet is an educational event, here are some helpful information to be known. So, question one often asked was, is 32-bit float audio magic? And the answer is no magic, no miracles in the world of physics is tolerated. And the question two was 4-bit versus 32-bit float audio recording quality. What is the difference? And the answer is yes, there is a difference, but 32-bit float isn't that useful for the dialed audio recording. And the question is, maybe Dr. Roy would like to say a few words, why 32-bit is not good for dialogue audio recordings?
Well, yeah, AC2GS. You got to keep in mind that I spent more than enough time badgering poor Eric when things like 8K video screens came out, and I said, well, why do we need 8K? You know, unless we like to watch TV 3 inches away from the screen. So, you know, I understand that manufacturers make up stuff to sell, to make a profit. It's business. 32 float has a value. It doesn't have kind of the value that you seem to be suggesting people are promoting. If they're promoting, then they're wrong. But it's kind of a making somewhat level adjustments idiot-proof. Some people run a recorder rather hot. They gain up. And when it gets past, you know, a certain point, you're left with nothing but distortion. The average sound system is 24 bits. If you had more than 24 bits of dynamic range, it would be a waste. Either you'd set it low, so most of the lower settings would be unheard, or you set it high, and then your ears blow out. So 24 bits is usually what is played. Recording 32 float allows for an error correction if you set the gain too high into the distortion range. With a 24-bit recorder, you're stuck. There's no way to retrieve the information. With a 32 float, you're operating at extra bits, so you can just adjust the levels accordingly and get back your distorted audio. So, you know, the way you're presenting it is fraud. The way some decent manufacturers are promoting it is a way of idiot-proofing recording levels. It's not a panacea. It doesn't fix everything. It barely fixes anything, but it does tend to fix people who don't know how to set their levels right.
Beautiful answer. Thank you very much, Dr. Roy. So, is it noticeable if you record to 32-bit slot. For an average listener, there is no way to find if it was digitally recorded at 16-bit, 24-bit, or 32-bit. In the old days of analog, it was a different situation, as clipping was the notorious problem. And then we have some myths, so 32, so let's say one of the myths, actually the question, is 32-bit float unclippable? And the answer is actually not. You can easily overload microphone. So when I was working in geophysics, we had the piezoelectric foil, and then we had analog to digital converter, and we could convert the information from the piezoelectric foil that was placed on the ground to listen to the vibration of the earth, natural vibration of the earth, and then we could actually deliver it to the computer and create in the computer the mod of that of the earth to 2 kilometers, which is 1.6 mile, and see everything that was beneath of it using the just regular photostyler, anything like a reductor of it. So very simple. So microphone cannot handle the sound pressure. I mean, if the microphone cannot handle the sound pressure levels that you are giving it as microphone, as it is a analog device, then the signal processing cannot help, and the digital is going to become distorted, and it's not because it is foolproof as 32-bit floating is, but because it got improper data into it. So the higher is the sensitivity of the microphone, the worse it becomes in the presence of the car honk or just unwrapping your favorite sweet candy while recording. Let me drop. And there is no 32-bit float transmitting wireless mic system on the market. So remember all of those wireless microphones, they are being worked, and you could make your YouTube video, or you could make a wedding or professional film because you have a microphone hidden or visible. It's up to you. So when you connect 32-bit recorder to the audio from wireless microphone set that is usually 16 bits, you are still limited to dynamic range of 24 or 16 bits or whatever the system is. You have no gain from using 32 bits, but you're paying money twice as much. So let's say you could buy a wireless microphone set for $160, but if you have a 32 bits, you may pay $1,200 for it. Okay. Now, any 32-bit float recorder makes perfect recordings. Is it true or is it a myth? Well, no. Right after the microphone, you have analog to digital processor. And China is China. And that is why it is cheap. So price and quality matters. Still matters. 32-bit float recorders have less self-noise floor level, but they are good in city hall, I mean in the music hall, in the musical when you're recording the music and you want everything from that. But if you're recording the conversation between two people, all of those sounds that you don't need are not supposed to be there. And then using DaVinci Resolve software, which is for free, you can take it out, but it is very hard to take it out from 32-bit. Okay, another myth. 32-bit float audio recording sounds better than 24 beat recordings. Absolutely not true. There is no